Let me take us off on a little topic, and then we'll just sort of kill a little time until Wayne gets on the call. Hopefully he'll be forthright in announcing himself when he comes in. I wanted to visit with you all about the last all DSSA call, which I didn't feel I did a very good job on. And I had an idea that I wanted to see if this made sense to you all. The trouble with doing sort of the notes at the same time that I'm running the meeting is that there are times when somebody comes up with a really subtle point, especially some of the points that John Levine and Eric were coming up with, where it's really hard for me to do a good job of summarizing. And what I thought I would encourage people to do is post a summary of their own comment into the chat so that I could just copy and paste it into the notes. And so I wanted to see if other people felt like that call didn't go very well, and B, whether that's a good solution to that. Not hearing overwhelming commentary.
Hi, Mikey. This is York. Are you hearing me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Go ahead.
So first of all, no complaints whatsoever concerning your performance on the last call. Nevertheless, I think it's a good suggestion, and we can do so from my point of view.
Okay, well, if I could recruit all of you to help with that, I'm going to try really hard to encourage people to do it, and if I somehow slip off, I really felt in the middle of that call like I was just completely out of control, and so I'm glad that people felt that the call was okay. Thanks for the kind words, Patrick. But I am going to try really hard to...
Probably we should assign it round-robin wise so that you do not have to choose between yet four or five different summaries, but just one of us could do it.
Yeah, either one of the co-chairs could do it or the person speaking could do it. Either way would be fine. You know, some of these points are, I mean, the fact that they're subtle and complicated is actually really good, because that means that we're not just reinventing sort of a Security 101 textbook. But at the same time, those summaries, I think, are going to be really important, if for no other reason than to get us back to to be able to remind us of it a couple of weeks or months later when we circle back to some of these things. So I see Wayne is coming in. He's in the Adobe room. Wayne, are you on the call yet?
I am indeed.
Hi, Wayne. Welcome to the gang. It's really great to have you here.
Thanks.
We'll sort of go quickly around the call, just introducing ourselves a little bit to give you a sense of who you're talking to. And then if it's okay with the rest of my fellow co-chairs, I'll take you through a short spiel of the puzzle that we're working on and the question that we'd like to pose to you.
Sure.
Let me start, and then I'll just run down the participants list in the Adobe room. Olivier, you can think about unmuting, because I think I'll go to you next, just so that it's easy for you to jump back in on the call.
I have unmuted.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself a little bit, and then I'll take it from there.
Yeah, hi. Thank you, Mikey. Hi, Wayne. My name is Olivier Crépin-Leblanc. I'm chair of the At-Large Advisory Committee, and we act in the best interest of the Internet users out there, and we generally comment on pretty much everything that happens at ICANN, sometimes favorably, sometimes not so favorably. That's pretty much it. Have I that a bit too much, Mikey, or is that...
That was perfect. That was... Everybody else do it just exactly the way Olivier did.
Okay.
I'll go next. I'm Mikey O'Connor. I'm the co-chair from the GNSO part. GNSO is the generic name support organization, so we're mostly interested in generic TLDs and not CCTLDs. And I'm a retired guy. Every day is a Saturday for me, and I do a lot of policy stuff in the ICANN world and also chair my state's local broadband commission. Who wants to go next? Jörg, how about you?
Okay. Okay, I'll give it a try. So my name is Jörg Schweiger. I'm the co-chair representing the CCNSO. And in my other life, aside from ICANN, I'm with DNIC, and I'm a CTO from DNIC.
Okay.
Perfect. Mark.
Sure. So, hi, Wayne. I think we've met before. My organization is associated with OARC, or a member of OARC. We've been getting lots of data over the last couple of years. And I'm the CTO of ARIN, American Registry for Internet Numbers, and also representing the NRO, which is the numbers resource organization that plays within the ICANN circles.
Yep.
Okay. I'm going to do a few of the staff folks because I think it's important to know that there are also folks from the ICANN staff on this call who are contributing a heck of a lot to this effort. So, Patrick, why don't you go ahead?
Yep, Patrick Jones from ICANN security team. Wayne, I think we met in D.C. back in 2009, but I work closely with John Crane, who I know you know well.
Yeah, I do know John very well.
Yeah.
Okay, and Bart?
Hi, Wayne. I'm with the CCNSO, and I think we have never met, but I know Roy Irons reasonably well. And, that's senior policy advisor, and one of the reasons is because of the CCNSO. One of the reasons I'm participating in this one and providing support is the CCNSO is one of the participating and supporting organizations.
Julie.
Yeah, thanks, Mikey. This is Julie. I have two hats. I support the ESSAC, which is primarily why I'm participating here because of participation from the ESSAC. But I also support the GNSO. So I'm a director of policy kind of on both sides of the fence.
Thanks, Julie and Christina.
Yes, hi Wayne. My name is Christina. We met at Tech Day in San Francisco. You were a great assistance to me when I was chasing down all the presentations.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I'm with the CCNSO Secretariat.
That's great. Okay. Wayne, if you'll bear with me for just about 5 minutes, I just want to sketch out the puzzle that we're working on.
Sure.
And I wasn't sure. Mark, did you send him a copy of this slide deck that's sitting up in the Adobe room, or should I?
Please go ahead.
I'm in the Adobe room, so that's fine.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure whether you had a chance to converse about it in advance. What I'm going to do is I'm not going to drag you through the whole shebang, but sort of zero in on the puzzle that we're working on. So most, I think everybody can navigate through, oh, no, you can't. Hold on a minute. Let me un-grab. If you want to roll forward or back, folks, you can now. But I'm primarily going to stay on this first slide. Basically, Wayne, the issue that we're up against is that given our charter, it's pretty likely that at some point or another we're going to have to dive into subgroups where the normal rule in ICANN is that almost all, if not all, of our information is to be public. There's the whole transparency set of rules. But we have a mandate in this group to violate the the public nature of information rules in certain circumstances because of the sensitivity of the information that we're likely to have to collect to figure these things out. And so what we've done is we've sort of spent some time thinking about that, and we've come up with the standard consultant's two-dimensional matrix here, which says that across the top, there are really two kinds of information. There's sensitive information, which needs to be private, and there's not sensitive information, which can be published both to the whole working group and to the public at large. And then on the vertical scale, we've come across information that's attributed to the person or organization that's providing it, and information that's not attributed. It's either contributed anonymously by the organization that's putting it into the soup, or a subgroup has seen attributed versions of it, and the subgroup has scrubbed it. So the little arrow that sort of overlays this is sort of one information flow, which is that the type 1 information in the lower right corner, or lower left corner, is the most sensitive. It's sensitive information that goes back to an organization and would be very troubling if it was released out into the wild.
Yep.
And so there's no path from that kind of information to the public view. That's the significance of that black bar there, is that that information should never, ever, ever go to the public side. Instead, what it might do is it might go from being type 1, attributed sensitive information, to being type 2, which is not attributed. And it could do that through the efforts of a subgroup that is under non-disclosures. We've already got a non-disclosure process in place. And the thought here, at least at this stage in our thinking, is that the providers of the information have the final say as to whether a scrubbed version of their information is sufficiently scrubbed that it can be released into the type 3 category. So the subgroup would work hard, but they don't get to overrule the provider. If the provider says, I'm sorry, I can't even tell you why, but this still makes me nervous, that's sufficient to stop the publication of any information to the public. The question that... And then the rest of it is let me just walk all the way through this little matrix, and then I'll get to the puzzler. Type 3 information is non-attributed, sanitized type information that could be, in fact, if it were not sanitized, if it were attributed, it could be quite sensitive. But presumably the subgroups have done a great job, and so as a result, it's suitable for release to the public. And then type 4, down in the lower right, is information that Mark or anybody else with sensitive information releases because it's not sensitive, you know.
Right.
And so that's sort of our little taxonomy. The puzzler is how to form these subgroups. And the issue is really one that we don't really have enough of a current example to be able to describe in any detail. But there may be circumstances where having competitors in the same subgroup is not a good idea, because no matter what, information would leak across in places where it just shouldn't, et cetera, et cetera. And so we kind of got stuck on this last week on our call. This call is not the whole working group. This is just the leadership group. And we mostly discuss this process kind of stuff on these calls and leave the content for the whole working group. And thought, okay, let's talk to the smart people at ORG who've confronted this problem before and see what you do and what ideas you have in terms of how to put people into those upper left corner type 2 sanitizing information subgroups.
Yep.
There you go. That's my spiel. That's my story. I'm sticking with it now. It's up to the whole group to pepper you with questions.
Okay. Well, I mean, when I explain what we do from an information, from a data perspective, and we can figure whether or not there's anything there that's useful, and then you can start asking me questions about it. So, I mean, OARC, as many of you know, does an awful lot of data gathering on the actual DNS protocol side of things. So, you know, query response, couplets for actual DNS data. And we do that for the root servers sort of an ongoing basis. We do it for the day in the life collections from a wider audience once a year, and then we do it for various things that we're asked of. ICANN asking students during the root signing last year, et cetera. So what we basically do is, and again, you have to realize that there's a couple of subtleties here. So for the most part, it's raw data right out of the servers. It contains source and destination addresses. It contains a bunch of stuff that people will consider sensitive, whether it's response rates, whether it's just raw numbers of servers, et cetera. We do get some stuff that's already pre-sanitized, primarily stuff that comes out of the EU, where the requirement is to anonymize the data start just before we get it. So some of that stuff gets mostly the source addresses, so who's actually doing the querying gets sort of anonymized into sort of a big block. So instead of knowing that it comes from a particular end user, it comes from, maybe the ISP in terms of the net, which could be quite, in most cases, a major telco. So we get very, very, very broad specific information for that. But we still get all the data. So that's all we collect. Now, the way we operate is that members who've signed the membership agreement and data sharing agreements are allowed to have access to the data. But that's only done on our physical servers. So to get access to that data, they actually have to log into one of our machines and do their analysis there. They're not permitted, and that's entirely a agreement thing, permitted, to move the data off our servers. So the concept being is that they can do the analysis there, they can take the results and publish the results, but they can't publish any or disseminate the raw data. And this allows the researchers or ourselves to publish the various reports that show, results in the macro sense without showing potentially competitive details. With the actual source information.
Wayne, as you can see, York's got his hand up, so you did a great job of stopping. It took me a minute to jump in because I was muted. So if it's okay with you, we'll let folks pepper you with questions as you go.
Absolutely.
But if you'd rather, you could run all the way through.
Let's just start the questions. I just wanted to give a background of sort of what we have data for, and then you guys can start figuring out whether that has any relevance in what you're doing.
Okay. Why don't we let you finish that, and then, because, that gives your, at least for me, it's hard to keep a whole thought in mind like that. And then, York, if it's all right with you, we'll just wait and pepper Wayne once he's done. Is that all right?
Well, that is pretty much the high-level view of what we did. So that's
Let me ask, okay, then York, go ahead. York, you may be muted.
Okay, Wayne.
There we go. Now you're set. Oh, you were good before. You're muted. And I'll bet that the conference...
I think we got a misunderstanding. So
there we go.
Would we want to let Wayne finish, or may I shut right away?
He finished. He solved the problem for us.
Okay. All right. So I was trying to mute on and off, and that somehow kind of distracted me from the conversation. Okay. Sorry about that. Well, probably, Wayne, I'm the one to blame contacting you, and that is all due to the reason or to the fact that I've been talking with Peter Koch.
Yep.
And he was giving me the impression that at least ORG meant to collect a little bit more of data than they currently have received. So I got the impression that ORG wanted to collect more sensitive information, but never kind of started really because nobody wanted to provide this information. And as a result or as a reaction to figuring out that nobody wanted to present their data, probably due to any concerns with confidentiality, I figured that the new initiative that is currently being started by ORG in a way that the board members represent kind of the first level of people to be trusted, and they do invite other people that they trust, so they are building, or you're currently building, kind of a circle of trusted people, and this circle of trusted people may be in a position to digest, distill information that is confidential and that you're hoping to receive in the future. So
okay.
That's what I got. Am I
yeah.
completely wrong, or?
No. Okay, this is the second half of what ORG does. So the first half is essentially just the physical data collection and analysis, which can be very different than information, right? So the other thing we do a lot of, is run a bunch of essentially mailing lists for people to communicate with. The most recent version of that is something that's based on a platform called SecureOps. So this is where you get into the situation. You've got vetting, and you've got circles of trust, and you have a way to enforce behavior based on what the group wants and how the information is being shared within a group is used. So if you think of it, it's essentially a mailing list that works by invite. So somebody suggests that a person should be a member. That person ends up having to be vetted. And based on the rules that you set for the number of vets they require, what people have to attest to be able to vet for somebody determines whether or not that person is allowed into the group. So, for example, in the case of the DNS one we run, you know, our rules are you need to have 5 people vet for you. Not just 5. They have to attest that they have either personally known you for several years or that they are in a position to deem that you are trustworthy to join the group. At the same time, the person who joins the group agrees to the same set of rules in terms of not disseminating information that is shared within that group outside the group. Now, the way the trust model works is that if a person, for example, I'm in the group, if one of the people who vouched for me either has to leave the group or is removed from the group, then I lose one of my vouchers. So it's quite possible that you have this ripple effect that somebody, you know, by removing somebody from the group or somebody leaving the group can have the effect that other people become less trustworthy because the person who is vouching for them is no longer there. So the model works quite elegantly in that it builds up its own trust model. That the people invite people who they think were trustworthy, and you end up getting sort of the model that you want. And that's very much a for information dissemination. You know, whether or not that's things like from a security standpoint, that's exploits in DNS code, that's patch information that's coming out in advance notice of problems with various vendors and various source code. we had the similar discussion of who can you invite into the group and when do you start running into situations where information is now becomes sensitive across vendors, for example. You have both ISC, who writes fine, and, you know, community DNS in the same group, because could they take advantage of each other's, you know, misfortunes kind of thing? The answer is, of course, they can. But the point of the group is you promise not to do that. And in our case, for the most part, the people in the group are the operators, not the marketing, not the politicians, not the, you know, that sort of part of the organization. So it is, for us, DNS, it is the operators that are part of that group.
This is Mikey again.
Yeah.
Wayne, how's that working? You know, the issue that Jorg is raising for us, in one sense, we may put this in the cross that bridge when we come to it category. But looking back in your experience, are there some things that either really helped things move forward or things that you saw that if you had them to do over again, you'd do differently?
Sure. The original model for this was something called the SecureOps, which is just a basic mailing list. By invite only, but it's a basic mailing list. It's been around for years and years. But what happened is that over the course of, you know, years, the list got polluted in that the people who ended up on that list were not always deemed worthy by the either the very, very, very low-level root operators or by some of the guys who run, let's say, are interested more in infrastructure than they are in, customers, from what their end goal is. So that group kind of went off the rails in that people stopped sharing the really sensitive information because they thought the list had members that weren't trustworthy. So the new list, when it was spun up around this whole idea of vetting and the whole idea of coaches and knowing that it was going to be a much slower growth, got around a lot of that problem because the initial people that got seeded into the group sort of invited like-minded individuals. And at the same time, we have a number of tracking tools that we use to show, OARC views itself strictly as part of the steering committee for the group, and eventually we will OARC as an organization will remove ourselves from that steering committee and let the group manage itself. We'll just continue to provide the technical support of managing it. But what we can do is we can show in a very simple visual method, we can show the relationships between vouchers and vouchees. So you can see if somebody is, tends to nominate or vouch for, dozens of people, yet don't get very many vouchers back. Or somebody who gets lots of vouchers for them, but doesn't in turn invite other people to the group. So it starts to highlight not necessarily problems, but, potential concerns about how the group is going to grow. For example, the one we just got is, this new group's only been around for a few months. We had an issue that came out of ISC and the binds, the last batch of bind stuff, where there were some efforts to sort of ramp the group up very, very quickly. And, we ended up with a whole bunch of nominations to the list that caused a lot of conversation, a lot of concern about in which direction the list was going. Now, as it turned out, the list self-policed itself, and a number of people who were nominated simply didn't get enough vouchers to join the group, and they eventually just sort of fall off the list. Again, you define how long you want somebody to be able to remain unvouched. And if they don't have significant vouchers, they sort of fall off the nomination list. That turned out to be actually not too bad in terms of self-policing it. What it does demonstrate is you do need a fairly active steering committee within that group to sort of continue to remind people what the charter is and what the mandate is, and to ensure people are, you know, truly paying attention to who they're vouching for, and making sure that the tests that are being used are you know, valid.
This is Mikey again. Anybody else got questions? I've got several in my head, but I don't want to totally dominate. So if anybody wants to jump in, feel free.
I have one. This is Mark.
Go ahead, Mark.
And as Wayne, do you have a non-disclosure agreement that you have people sign so that there's some, aside from just vouching and attesting to the sort of trustworthiness of individuals, do you have something that has some sort of larger framework that large firms like to see as well on dealing with confidential information?
We didn't in this case. It would certainly be the framework allows for it. I mean, it's more of an end-user agreement in that, you know, you have to agree to the terms and conditions before you join the list. It would certainly be relatively straightforward to, you know, just to change that around, the wording of that around in such a way to match whatever, you know, sort of legal or process requirement you might have.
Just a follow-up question on that, if I may.
Yeah.
And that is, has any of the people who are dealing with this super top secret list, have they discussed anything to this nature, or are they just going to, are they happy with things as it's turned out to be?
They're so far they're happy the way it's turned out to be. I think the bigger issue, the bigger concern is how do you manage the list? How do you manage the inevitable slip ups? Because, I mean, the reality is, no matter how much stuff you make people sign or agree to, if they're going to be black hats, they're going to be black hats, right? In which case, again, a list like this, they get unvouched very quickly and don't get invited back. Can it still harm people? Sure, absolutely. But again, I don't think there's any way of preventing that from happening with any, you know, security system.
All right. Thank you.
So far, the answer is so far it's working. People seem to like the framework we put in place. It's lightweight enough that people can join easily and do it because they are, you know, in our case, DNS operators. But at the same time, it gives people enough understanding of exactly what the requirements and what the obligations of the members are.
Yeah, thank you very much, Wayne.
Sure.
This is Mikey again. Anybody else got questions for Wayne?
Yeah, hi there. It's Olivier.
Go ahead.
Thank you. And I'm sorry if there's much noise in the background because I'm in a public area and it's a bit noisy around here. I was going to ask Wayne, you mentioned access to physical data that needs to remain on the OAuth servers themselves and for the analysis to take place on the OAuth servers. Does it mean that OAuth has to provide facilities for analysis of this data?
We do indeed. We have a number of analysis machines that people use.
As in a data analysis with analysis software, et cetera? Because one concern I do have is, I don't quite think that ICANN has this sort of analysis equipment, and then one would probably have to host it maybe with one of the participating companies, or I don't know. It's just a few questions. I don't know how the others feel about this.
Yeah, in our case, that was our mandate, so that's what we have that those abilities in place. Certainly, if you're collecting a large amount of data, for example, DNS, then yes, it can absolutely be a problem, both from a data storage perspective as well as from a horsepower perspective of having enough gear in place. The other option, which of course you could do, is you could invite people to host equipment within your facilities with the same mandate that data never leaves the boxes.
Olivier, do you have a follow-up on that? It's an interesting question. I hadn't thought about it.
I don't know how the others feel about this.
Well, I'm going to put it on my list of open questions for sure. because, you know, I can see a few ways to do it, some of which aren't too expensive. I mean, you know, I can see buying a little Mac Mini and putting that somewhere pretty secure, let some smart security person make sure that it's pretty tied down, but it is an interesting puzzle for sure.
You're dealing with lots and lots of disks, though. This is Mark. So
yeah.
It becomes very expensive very quickly, as IAC has learned, or OARC has learned.
Yep.
So I guess to me, that is a value add. I'm not sure how much that it would help us in the short term in fulfilling this mission for ICANN.
Yeah, that's probably true as well, is that if we're getting into the actual crunching of raw DNS query data, we may be a little lower in the stack than we need to be.
Yeah.
Okay, here's what I really kind of want to do, Wayne, is sort of summarize the process and make sure that I've got the interesting new bits that you've described captured. So if I'm a wannabe member of I'm going to use our structure to see if it maps. If I wanted to be in a subgroup about something, you know, we the co-chairs would publish a list of subgroups that says, okay, here are the threats that need secure confidential subgroups, and there's three. There's one about hippopotamuses, there's one about racing cars, and there's one about pickles. And we publish that list on the wall and say, anybody who wants to be in those three groups, raise your hand. Because I'm assuming that the first action is from somebody who wants to join the group, right? This isn't one where people are invited. They're self-applying, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I raise my hand and say, I would like to be in the pickles group.
Mm-hmm.
And I then go into a pile of self-nominated folks who need to be vouched for. And that list gets published. And other people who are already in the group vouch for me. And when I get to a threshold, 5 or 2 or whatever, you know, we
yep.
decide, then I become a member of the group, and I retain my membership until the list of people that vouch for me falls below the required number, at
right.
which point I'm immediately removed from the group. But if somebody left, presumably what we could do is put the word out that this person's leaving and note that I will fall below the threshold unless somebody else steps up and vouches for me to replace that person.
Absolutely.
That's sort of how that's handled.
Yep.
And so the interesting question is, what's the seed? You know, in order for this to work, there has to be an initial group of trusted folks who vouch for others. How did that get started? Was there just a group of folks that was so trustworthy that everybody else said, yeah, you guys can be the initial group?
And that's, but I mean, in our case, in this specific case, we picked the first, I believe it was the current board of directors for OARC, seated the list. And we basically went by ourselves, you know, sitting over coffee in San Francisco, said, okay, let's come up with 10 people or 20 people, 10 people each, who we think would be absolutely a slam dunk for this list. And then we basically vouch for them among ourselves
yeah.
to get them to see the list, right? So we made sure that the first batch that went in weren't going to have any contentions at all. And
right.
again, this is DNS operations, right? So this is, you know, it's Paul Vixie, it's you know, John Crane, it's Joe Abley. You know, it's guys who, when something bad happens on the internet, these guys are already in the know, you know, before it gets to the list, right?
Right.
So, you know, we pick those people. I mean, the list, I mean, in this case, and there's a bunch of these lists around. I mean, the DNS O'Rourke one is, you know, is the least don't talk about Fight Club version of this stuff.
Yeah.
There is one that runs around, I know, for the root operators. That's very secretive. It's very hard to find out who's on the list at all, or what even the list is called. But that is, again, that's more the mandate of what the group's doing. In our case, there was some value to us publishing the existence of the list because we wanted to get people to start thinking about how to use it. But the actual people on it, and we put out the call. If you think you should be part of this list, please let us know, and we will put you on the self nomination list, and we'll see what happens. And it worked pretty well, you know, for that stuff. But yes, we did pick a core people group that we thought would be above reproach from a operation stuff, and go from there.
So I'm gonna do a pivot at this point and sort of swing around to our gang and ask the question. I certainly get this, and I could certainly write it up, and it certainly seems like it would work to me. But I'm curious what other people think. Would this address the puzzler that we were working on before?
I'll add one more thing to it, guys. The way our list works is that we've turned on PGP so that when somebody wants to publish something to the list, for example, a security bulletin coming out of ISC, it can be PGP encrypted so that when it ends up in somebody's inbox, it's still encrypted until that person decodes it. So I don't know if you guys are that, you know, paranoid, but those functionalities do exist as well.
I'm going to hold that thought because I think there's sort of a series of operational questions that popped into my head. But let me stay with this puzzler question to the other co-chairs for a minute. Can anybody see anything with this that wouldn't work for us? Anything about our mandate or our, and it's not just co-chairs, Bart, Julie, Christina, anybody's welcome. Patrick, you're all welcome to join in. Can anybody see something that we would need to tune on this? Because it's quite appealing to me to have a pretty straightforward process that's not terribly clubby. I mean, it is in fact clubby, but it's not, you know, the cool kid co-chairs get to decide. It's this.
Well, I mean, the reality is that if you want to go to the nth degree, I mean, if you wanted the co-chairs, for example, to be the ones who seed the groups, you can define it in the. I mean, this is all just textual documentation, but you can define it in the criteria for the group that says we will be around for 3 months while we seed this group, and then we're stepping out. So you guys are going to be part of the group, right? I mean,
I'm not sure that. For example, I'm just a retired guy that owned an ISP once, and you know, I've done security strategies for a bunch of people, but I'm not a current DNS security practitioner. And, you know, I'm not sure that I need to be in these groups. I mean, I'm good at running meetings and writing reports and stuff like that, so I might be useful from that standpoint. But in a way, I could imagine that the seed group is some of the more active day-to-day security practitioners like Mark and Patrick and Jim Gavin, who's another co-chair but isn't on the call today, to sort of up the level of confidence in the seed group. So, that's I mean, that's neither here nor there right now. I guess what I'm curious about from the co-chairs is, and the other leadership group members is, if anybody sees any showstoppers in this approach, and if not, then I guess what I would suggest is that, I draw another picture and stick it into our draft, and we hammer on it until we get to a place that we like and move forward from there. I hear Olivier's background. You want to jump in?
Thank you, Mikey. You do. And the music has just stopped, thankfully, for a few minutes, so I thought I'd jump in. I like the idea of a trust model. However, I do feel that it has this feel of the old boys club. And I understand at some levels of internet technical buds, as one would call them, everyone has been knowing each other for so many years, and there is no question of being able to vouch for someone else. We would all do so, but I'm not quite sure that at ICANN level one would be able to vouch for other people in the same way as this model. The other question, this is a statement. The next thing is a question, and it's whether the trust model is actually affirmed by legal means as well. In other words, are there NDAs being signed? Are there various legal documents that need to be signed in case breach is effected? Thank you. And I'll go back to mute so that you won't hear the background. Thank you.
Wayne, you want to take a crack at that?
I think the legal stuff and the documentation you want signed is more a question of how do you want your own process. In our case, no, because we wanted a fairly lightweight thing that was more based on terms of use, so that there are a set of documents that go with the group that say this is the charter, this is the terms of use, this is the exact wording that you're using. But here are your two or three documents that define how this list gets run, and being part of the group means you agree to these terms. If you need to take it to another level and you say you want it, signed documents, by all means, but that becomes an out-of-band process.
Yeah, and I think in our case we probably would. We've already got that process in place, and it's the sort of thing that I think it gets back to the point that Mark was making. Oh, Mark, you've got your hand up. Go ahead.
Thanks, Mikey. I guess just to kind of further this along a bit, DNS OARC is actually full of geeks who don't have a lot of there may be some competitive nature with the parties that play in it. They're sort of reduced compared to what I've seen at ICANN. At ICANN, it's ultra-competitive. And you always have parties who are trying to put their name above the others in whatever forms they can. And in this case, I think that the informal sort of nature that OARC has that works really well for them, I don't think will work very well here.
Is there another kind of sort of, in addition to vouching, is there another dimension to this, Mark, that says, if that guy's in the group, I can't be? I'll pick, Pickles. So I'm from Gettner, and you're from Mark's pretty good homebrew Pickles, and there's no way that the two of us can be in the same subgroup because we're competitors. And so do we need, in addition to sort of a trustworthiness vouching process, do we also need a process that lets people opt out or block somebody if they feel like there's this competitive issue?
Yeah, I think that's actually a great idea. I guess one of the things I'll echo, again, is I think that there really needs to be some sort of legal framework associated with this. And it sounds like the non-disclosure agreement that ICANN came up with as part of this initial charter is sufficient, at least for those who are participating so far, to be a part of this. So maybe we can couple the two together where you have this sort of informal let's vouch for each other thing going on, but we can also have, they've not only vouched, but they also signed the agreement.
Oh, yeah, I'm presuming that, actually.
Okay.
That,
okay.
You know, that's actually in our charter, is that in order to be in a subgroup, you have to have signed the agreement. You don't have to sign the agreement to be a part of DSSA, but in order to be in one of the subgroups, or at least the secure subgroups, you have to have the NDA signed before you can do that. So that's almost a checklist item.
Okay.
And then, you know, I think that what we could do is we could stick with this vouching process, but then once the subgroup arrives at, I mean, OARC is sort of an ongoing thing, whereas we are not, and maybe what we do is we have a stage where we say, okay, people are vouched. Before we form the subgroup, do we have any issues of competitors feeling uncomfortable being in the same subgroup, and thus we need to either split the subgroup or you know, at least deal with it before we launch the subgroup. I think that all of my goals in this are to give the providers of confidential information confidence that they're not going to accidentally lose control of their information in a way that's very destructive to their organization, because clearly we can't have that.
So I have one other question I'm going to ask, and it's kind of reaching a little bit, and I apologize if I bring people a little bit off guard. But I'm wondering if there's a way that we can work together with OARC and say, hey, look, is there a way that we can reach out to each other so that we can share information? I'm not sure if it's possible or whatever else, but that would be a good bootstrap for us, Mikey, as we start building this. But it's also, I think it's also good for OARC. Is there a way that we can create some sort of partnership?
Let me jump in first, and then others can comment. We certainly have that in our charter. We have in our charter the mandate and, in fact, charge to reach out to other members of the security community as appropriate. And so it certainly was foreseen by our charterers that we might be wanting to do this. And they gave us some air cover if we ever felt like we needed to. So at least from a kind of process standpoint, it's certainly possible. I'll let others comment. I'm not familiar enough with OARC and what it does to know whether this work or not, but certainly from a process standpoint, we can.
Yeah, I mean, OARC would certainly be happy to help out in any way we can.
You know, in a way, that might solve the infrastructure for analysis problem, you know. In fact, if there's a cost associated with it, we could probably all dig into our respective pockets and come up with some money. We might even dig into Bart's pocket and see if he could come up with some money to help offset that. But, you know,
right.
It would be nice not to have to reinvent an infrastructure that's going to be tricky to invent, I think, if there's one that's suitable already out there. York, go ahead.
Yeah. I think this very heavily depends on for how long are we obliged to find out about the stability and the security of the DNS. And I think this working group has been set up just to do this once, and I'm not very sure whether or not we are meant to set up some permanent mechanisms. And as opposed to that, I feel that one of the nature of OARC's mission is to provide such means, and that is on a permanent base. So I would feel really confident to get into touch with OARC like we already did by talking to Wayne. And I just want to point out that the issue is more or less related to the discussions we had with setting up a DNS cert and all the discussions that have been following on that issue. And there had been discussions whether or not the cert should be abolished and the role of a cert or a DNS cert could be taken care of by OWASP and all that kind of discussions. I don't want to refer to the whole content on this call, but just want to make sure that everybody else is aware of the relationship between the setting up of the DSSA, one, and the discussions that have been going around concerning the suggestion of ICANN to set up a DNS cert.
This is Mike again. I just want to jump in on that and reaffirm what York said. We are a one-time deal. We have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and when the end arrives, we're done. We stop. Whereas OARC is an ongoing thing. And I can see a couple of productive paths. One is, as we're doing our one-time thing, I can see us encountering problems that are good ongoing puzzles to solve that we could reach out to Wayne and the rest of the OARC folks and say, A, are you working on this? And B, would you be interested in working on it? And C, would you help us with our one-time thing and then maybe think about if it's useful carrying it on an ongoing basis? So that we take advantage of a resource where it's appropriate, but at the same time, I agree wholeheartedly that we do not want to be in business forever. That's not our charter. We're at the top of the hour, at least pretty darn close to it. We've got a couple of minutes left before we should let everybody go. Is there anything that anybody wants to add to the conversation before we wrap it up?
I'd just like to thank Wayne for actually coming and sharing with what OARC's doing. I think that's really exciting. Thanks, Wayne.
No problem. Happy to help. Like I said, guys, if you do want help or any other information, just let me know. More than happy to help.
Yeah, I'd like to join in Mark's thanks. This has been a really, really helpful call. Before we wrap up, one thing I want to add is, and I need to check this with Wayne, our normal tradition is that this call has been recorded, and I realize that we didn't tell you that until just now. And the second thing is that this call, the recording of this call, or a link to it, gets published to the worldwide Internet, which we also didn't tell you. And so I think, Christina, before we publish the recording of this call, let's at least give Wayne a chance to think about whether or not he wants that recording to be...
I don't have a problem with that. I didn't say anything which is very confidential or anything. That's not a problem.
Right. I just don't want you to... I want you to, just like I want the other providers of information to feel comfortable, I want to make sure that you don't feel like we just mousetrapped you into putting a bunch of stuff that you just as soon not have on the net. So why don't you think about it for a while. We'll send you the link to the recording if you want to listen to it, and then why don't you email Mark and me back, Mark, me, and Christina maybe, or this list back, just saying it's okay, and that way we will not publish this one until you've had a chance to think about it.
Okay, I'll send it to Wayne first.
Thanks, Christina. I think that's it. Let me join Mark in saying many thanks, Wayne. This is extremely helpful and just what we needed to
No problem at all. If you guys are meeting, if you're still chugging away, I'll be in the car. So if there's meetings around there that you guys want some FaceTime, let me know.
Oh, terrific. A lot of us will be into the car.
Yeah.
Mikey, this is Julie. I just have a question. With respect to the discussion on confidentiality today, I know you've been capturing a lot of these things for the wiki. Did you feel that you were able to catch what we discussed today? Is that what we're going to use for the discussion at the meeting on Thursday to start out? Or did you want staff to try to consolidate some of what you've captured up to this point?
I've captured almost nothing. So if one of the staff folks would like to take a pass through this first, that would be fantastic.
Well, I just thought that you've got actually quite a bit of information in the slide that you shared with us in the Adobe Connect, so I thought that was actually quite a good place to start, if you think that's something that we could start with as staff to perhaps put together some text.
I tell you what, I've got a giant mind map going on this thing. It's pretty easy for me to add the information we got from the call to that. And so let me just listen to the MP3 and pick off the stuff. If you roll down in the slide deck, you'll see the mind map basically in outline format. But we've got quite a lot already there. And
yeah, that's Mikey, this is Julie. That's what I was thinking. It looked like you had been doing an excellent job, actually, of getting this mapped. So if you want to add what you want, then staff can use that as a starting off to perhaps put a little text around.
Yeah, that's fine. We're still at, in terms of the Thursday call, we're not going to talk about this topic. We're gonna stay on threats, and we're not going to make the mistake I made last time of trying to zoom off to another topic in the middle of threats, because that got too complicated. So there's not a lot of time pressure on developing this stuff.
Mike, this is Bart.
Yeah, go ahead, Bart.
Maybe it's an idea, so say based on the ops call from last week, it's more a question of do you want to revisit this topic again, or do you want at a point in time present say a kind of note to the working group to see, okay, this is what we discussed regarding confidentiality and related to the charter, and this is how we propose to deal with it in future.
The way that we are, I think, going to do this, there's a pretty strong desire on the part of the co-chairs to get on to real work.
Yeah, and not just the co-chairs, but the working group as well.
Yeah, and so I think what we're going to do with confidential information is the co-chairs may keep pecking away at this for a while, with calls like this one to folks like Wayne. And then when we get closer to the time where we actually need to form subgroups will be the time that we'll circle back to the larger group and say, well, here's where we're at now. Let's run through this on an all-working group call. Get your opinions. Then we'll go to a consensus call candidate the next week, and then another week can go by so that we get our two-call rule for consensus.
Yeah, and maybe in preparation of such a meeting, because that would make it easy for you as well, is if staff would draft, say, a kind of, based on the wiki, etc., a kind of consolidated document, say, this is based on the conversation so far, what we have, say, for the ops to see if there are any gaps left, because that makes it easier. Excuse me. Then we can park the issue until such moment that you need the two sequence or the two calls to seek consensus from the working group members.
Yeah, we could do that. I'm not sure that we're going to need a whole lot more detail than we've got in the document as it stands, but we can maybe take that off. Wayne, you certainly don't have to listen to all this.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think we need to kind of drop the call. It's getting to be 5 minutes after the hour. So maybe let's put that on the agenda for next week's ops call and draw this one to a close.
And the basic idea is why we're suggesting it is, say, it's for the ops as well to start, say, focus on the next bit.
Because everybody's really interested.
To conclude, see if we can conclude the confidentiality, the initial confidentiality discussion from an ops point of view as well.
Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, folks, that's it. We're 5 minutes late.
Great.
Have it. We'll see you all later. Thanks again, Wayne. You were the man on that one.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
See you all.
Thanks very much, Mikey.
See you, Olivier.
Bye.